now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome on into our streaming show today. We are glad you are here. Thank you for joining us. I am Lindsay Ayres. We're going to talk today about a handful of local and national topics impacting us in the great state of Utah. The future of the debates in Utah has come up. Thanks to yours truly. Also, the Great Salt Lake and special session. We had some reporting on that this week. So we're going to talk about that. The U of U cut a bunch of programs, part of the higher ed reinvestment strategy from the legislature. And then we still have week after week, we could just make it a recurring segment, the Epstein Files. And will they be released or won't they? It's the greatest reality show of all time. So we'll talk about all of that. Joining me, my panelists, Leah Murray, Taylor Morgan. Guys, hi.
Hello.
So good to be with you.
Always a pleasure.
Tell me who you are.
I'm Leah Murray, a political science professor up at Weber State University and director of the Walker Institute of Politics and Public Service.
Award-winning and Dr. Murray.
That's right.
Just clarify.
Barbara Birch Award winner.
That's right.
For
correct.
Civic engagement.
Thank you.
Correct. Thank
wow.
you.
Wow. Taylor, what have you done?
I am just, you know, I'm Taylor Morgan. I work for Leah Murray, which is actually technically now
it's
accurate.
Kind of true. He's teaching a class up at Weber State.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. But you're a lobbyist.
I'm a partner at Morgan May Public Affairs, a local political consulting lobbying firm.
Political consulting and lobbying. Love it. All right. Producer Peter is here, too. Hi, Producer Peter.
Hi, everybody.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great.
Are
I'm
you?
About to go on vacation.
So. Me, too. So I'm really glad.
It timed out really well.
Yeah. Which reminds me, if you are watching our Inside Utah Politics show on TV next week, just know that we have a guest host next week. I will be out of town. So Jordan Tracy, our fabulous reporter here at ABC4, going to fill in for me. So I'm excited for that. And we'll cover municipal races and all that good stuff.
Very much looking forward to it, but we'll miss you.
And do you guys know that Peter does all the work around here and for me? Let's just put that on the record.
I'll take the credit. Yeah, no, if you're
does.
Willing to say that.
Everything you see visually is because of Peter.
Yeah. So. He's still not wearing pants, though.
No. He doesn't wear pants.
That's not something they see visually.
But is a all really right. good producer.
And we're not sure you're wearing pants, Taylor, because
fair.
You can't see it either.
I'm in
pants
a
check.
Suit.
Everyone stand
<That's>
up. All right. Let's,
audience, that applies to you as well.
Let's dive right in, shall we? Okay. This week, I did some reporting on the Utah Debate Commission. It was, we got a tip that one of the founders of the Utah Debate Commission had resigned. His name is Richard Davis. He started, helped start the group back in 2014-ish. He was a founding member, but in his resignation letter to 24 other members of the board, he basically went on a tirade about the way he believes that the Utah legislature, GOP leaders, and even former Governor Gary Herbert are usurping control of debates in the state. They have stripped the funding of the UDC. They have now given that funding to two universities, Herbert and Hinckley Institute of Politics, to create their own system of nonpartisan debates. On top of that, the UDC has faced years of criticisms, mainly from the GOP, that their organization skews and is biased against Republicans. In my story, I had an example where they didn't allow a Republican chief of staff for the Senate onto the board. Now they denied that it had to do because he was a Republican, but some see it differently. So with that as the backdrop, we need to talk about the future of debates in Utah. Leah, do you think, and I want to disclose, you are on the Utah Debate Commission. You're
right.
a board member.
Right.
So
correct.
You are part of this story here, just in the fact
right.
that you got
right.
this email, presumably.
I received the email as well.
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Presumably you got an email. What did you make of the email when you got it? And what do you think the future of that organization is?
So I want to just point out, I think it's so important to have debates. And if no one really understood that, watching the June 2024 debate where Joe Biden clearly demonstrated he should not be running for president,
yeah.
which I would argue we might never have found out. So the thing about debates that I love your reporting, Lindsay, but a little bit about debates is in real time, live, candidates are answering questions. There can be no accusation later of spin. I mean, political reporters play such an important role, but debates in a campaign cycle, there's nothing that equals it for information for voters. It is so important that we have them. So my concern is if the Utah Debate Commission, and as you said, I'm on the board because as the Walker Institute, the universities host debates. Last year, we hosted the senatorial debate. So we are part of making debates possible. Mm-hmm. A little bit, if that Utah Debate Commission goes away, my concern only is that we make sure that we have a method to make incumbents and challengers come to a debate where they have to answer questions in real, live time so that voters get the information that they need.
So you don't care who puts it on,
correct,
how or by what method, you just want the debate and a nonpartisan venue where that can happen.
Absolutely. This republic, it depends on information and the voters and citizens having the information. And to me, you know, notwithstanding both of what you do in the political sphere and what I do in the political sphere, but the debate is such a unique and important moment in a campaign, we can't lose it.
So, Taylor, is there a role for both the UDC and the universities who now have $600,000 in their pockets to organize this nonpartisan debate system? Is there room for both these organizations in Utah?
No, there's not. The Utah Debate Commission hasn't been relevant for years. And no offense to Professor Dr. Leah Murray here, who's on the board.
We disagree respectfully.
The Utah Debate Commission has been a complete and total mess for years. Their media coalition is non-existent. No one watches their debates. Candidates don't participate in their debates because they simply don't matter. The Utah Debate Commission has not been willing to adapt, to change, to improve their debates. They haven't responded at all in a meaningful way to really legitimate criticisms.
What is wrong with them?
They're made up. The board is made up primarily of Democrats, progressives, liberal, unaffiliated voters. I mean, for goodness sake, Richard Davis was the founder of the Utah United Party, a partisan, a party founder, also the debate commission founder, who was still on the board until recently. Come to find out, he lives in Florida.
Yeah.
He hasn't even lived in Utah for years, and he's been a board member of the Utah Debate Commission.
Now, he maintains he stepped away from the board when he was running UDC.
Then why did he send this email resigning from the board?
Well, at the time, he stepped away and then maybe rejoined.
Oh,
later.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm talking about moving to Florida.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying the accusation a little bit that he used the Debate Commission to further the United Utah Party in a way. He's saying he stepped away for a time.
Yeah. Right. But even happened. Right there. And again, I'm on the board, so I want to be careful. But I'm also one of the universities. We didn't get money. So I want to also be clear that money went to the U and to UVU. But a little bit, we made a decision last year to have third parties on the stage based on polling. That at that time, as a political scientist, I was like, this doesn't make
the polling
any
was
sense.
Not
right.
legitimate.
And so a little bit, while it might not have been just for UUP, it begs the question, why were we having, I hate to say it, but like non-viable candidates on the stage that didn't have a reasonable chance of winning, taking up airtime in the moment, the only moment where we're getting candidates to actually answer questions and respond to each other. And then we hear that the person who is on the board making these decisions is someone who's founding third parties. It doesn't even have to be that one party, but it's like, that seems to me to be a conflict of interest that, quite frankly, I wasn't aware of and I should have been.
Let me just say, I also believe strongly in information. I believe in debates theoretically. But over the last few years, I have personally advised my clients to not participate in Utah Debate Commission debates because the Debate Commission has been so ineffective and so irrelevant and so frankly non-responsive to legitimate concerns and complaints. Those debates have not mattered in Utah. We need debates that matter. And that is exactly why I believe it's a good thing that the Utah legislature is not funding the Utah Debate Commission.
And speaking of that funding, I want to get your last take on this before we move on. Do you think, Taylor, let me start with you, that the two institutions who now have been given $600,000 from the legislature, can they really create a nonpartisan system? Do you trust that that system will be nonpartisan? Because the accusation from Richard Davis is the GOP will, the Utah legislature will now just control the purse strings and be able to manipulate those two groups.
Well, the Utah legislature has always and will always control the purse strings when it comes to public money. That is what they do. And we know that these debate commission debates that are held on university campuses, they have been funded by university and public dollars. The debate commission hasn't and is not raising private money for their cause. All of it is funded by Utah taxpayers.
How are we supposed to trust that those two groups can separate
because
themselves?
Because the Hinckley Institute has done it well.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I also want to add right here This bothers me. Just because it's a government agency that is funded by the legislature doesn't mean not or partisanship is baked in. Yeah. It really very much to me smacks of the same criticisms people are making of elections officials in this state. Yeah. So the argument kind of goes, because you're an elections official and you are paid for by state or taxpayer money, therefore, there's a problem. No, actually, the government does a lot of jobs. Yeah. One of it is higher ed. One of it is running elections. Yeah. And you can't have that be a claim for then it being partisan.
I see what you're saying.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. The state runs elections, right? You can make the same accusation that they're being partisan because we're GOP controlled.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Well, we'll have to see how it all shakes out. Want to move to another topic that got reported this week, and that is that House Speaker Mike Schultz reportedly wants the Great Salt Lake issues to be covered in an upcoming special session. We have heard rumors that this fall, likely early fall, there will be a special session. It's something lawmakers and the governor have signaled for months now. And so the speaker came out this week and said he wants Great Salt Lake issues on that special session. I think the biggest issue for them is, do they raise the berm to separate those two north and south arms? That helps protect the south arm where a lot of the ecosystem is, gets more water in there. I guess, Taylor, let me start with you on this one. How much can we really do legislatively to fix the Great Salt Lake? Because it seems to me that the rivers flowing into the Great Salt Lake and the water that diverts from them is really the issue, and we're not addressing that.
Well, we haven't addressed it fully. I do want to give, and not just because I'm a Republican, but I do want to give the Utah legislature some credit for taking this issue seriously. The Utah legislature, which of course is dominated by Republicans, has really, I think, demonstrated seriousness when it comes to the Great Salt Lake. They have passed legislation. They have appropriated significant amounts of money to try to improve the Great Salt Lake. This is a specific example of the berm. Speaker Mike Schultz has said, well, maybe we should raise the berm. I want to raise it by 2 feet. Well, environmentalists in Salt Lake County agree with him on this. This is an alignment of a very conservative, agricultural-oriented Speaker of the House.
And the eco-terrorists?
And the eco-terrorists. This doesn't happen very often, and so I want to give both sides credit for coming together. I think we have a long ways to go. But we're doing it, I think, the right way, and most importantly, it appears as if we may do it together.
Leah, do you see any other way legislatively we can get more water into the Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, I mean, I think your point is an excellent one. I wanted to add, I think probably I was reading the same article you were, Lindsay, that reported on this, how consumer use of water actually was up. And so some concern that like consumers are maybe watering their lawns more than they're supposed to in a way that they hadn't been the last couple of years. So I just want to add that when Speaker Brad Wilson said, this is the year of water, right? What a legislative session was it when they were like, this is the year of water.
Right.
Yeah. So to a certain extent, they can't make it rain, right?
Fair.
They can't, right? But they can absolutely make it a priority.
We are trying to make it rain with cloud seeding.
But that's my question, though, is the political will to mandate things. There is not political will to mandate things.
But I'm not sure that there was political will to mandate things under Speaker Wilson, but by elevating the conversation, consumers stopped using as much water.
Well, and they have done a lot to bring farmers and bring the agricultural industry upstream to the table. Mm-hmm. They have taken steps to reduce water usage in
Ag
Utah
optimization,
on the Bear River.
Technology, right? Getting them grants, allowing them water rights to change.
The Utah State Legislature cannot dictate terms to Idaho. And like with really any other problem, I blame Idaho, right?
Clearly.
And I blame the potato farmers in, you know, southeastern Idaho. They're the problem.
You always see them watering midday when you drive like I
do. But I feel like you like French fries, so I think you should, you know, take
it down. I do love French fries, Leah. That's
you need a French
point.
Fry lobbyist.
I am part of the problem.
Okay. Quickly, you've got like 1 minute each to speculate on what else will be on the special session list. Give me something.
Wow.
Give me something. Some hot goss.
Don't you think they're going to bring up what they failed at last year?
Yes.
So I'm thinking like gubernatorial vetoes, things that maybe the Supreme Court was knocking down. Like, I think those things
the governor's veto on the justice having involvement there.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Definitely coming up. Property taxes, education funding.
Right. Which is going to be a huge shift because that was one big bill that really concerned the education community as we were trying to reroute the property taxes through the state in order to be equalized back out. And the locals were like, don't like that plan. But if this comes back in a special session, there will undoubtedly be some drama around how we fund education.
Yeah.
Right.
Elections, I think it's important to point out that we may see some
aspect of election.
We may see some technical cleanups to significant elections legislation, vote by mail legislation that was passed last session. Now, of course, they wouldn't do anything that impacts the current municipal cycle. But we know that if they want to do anything with elections ahead of the 2026 primary cycle, that would have to happen now.
Fair.
Because it would be too late to do that
in
the regular session in January.
Yep.
So that's something we should all watch for.
Are we talking deadlines? Would they change that?
Anything is possible.
Would they change the last four of the social? Would they change that?
Stop digging. I've said what I can say.
So what else is on the record over here?
That's all I got. Yeah.
All right. We'll look for it. Okay. Want to talk higher ed cuts. Lee, I'm going to start with you. The U of U cut 81 programs.
Right.
But by and large, the U has said that these programs had 0 to 1 graduates over the last 8 years. Is the U getting it right with these programs that they're cutting? 81 is a lot. College of Humanities really getting hit. This is the argument from, I think, the left, who often says, social services, humanities, you guys don't care about these things. What's your take?
Yeah, so one social sciences professor, so I'm absolutely in a college that took some hits in this latest round. But right what you just said, there's 81 programs and some of them have had 0 graduates. Mm-hmm. So a little bit to me,
it's hard to argue they're needed.
Yeah, like if we have any sense of accountability, one of the questions has to be, does this program, is this degree possible for a student to graduate in a timely manner? Is this degree, like my question, that begs a question. How did you have nobody? Did you not notice there was nobody in your program?
I was shocked when I saw this story come out about these 81 programs at the University of Utah alone, just one, and albeit the largest, but just one university in Utah. To me, this was a huge signal that the legislature was spot on. There was a huge need to do this, if only at the University of Utah. 81 programs with 0 or 1 graduate in the last 8 years. How did these programs exist?
Right. And my what I would add too to that is in the last round, we were talking about enrollments and numbers of majors, and the numbers of graduates wasn't in the conversation. And at that point, I was kind of like, there's another metric here that maybe we should be looking at. So the fact that this came out, you know, you asked earlier, what do we think maybe the legislature looks at? I wonder if they say, oh, we missed that, right? Yeah. So this metric we should add to our list going forward.
Yeah. And redundancy is important here, right? Because there may be programs exactly like the programs were cut at the U of U. Other colleges, universities in the state or in states nearby or neighboring Utah may have similar programs that have high enrollment. So I think we just need to be smart and efficient with how we spend that kind of money. And I'm really grateful the legislature did that, despite the controversy.
So there's no more modern dance at the University of Utah major. There's no computational engineering and science certificates anymore. There's no nuclear engineering. These are some of the majors that got cut.
I guess what's shocking is, are you saying we had 0 or 1 graduate in nuclear science in the last 8 years?
There's a list of 81, and then it's a number. I want to say at least a dozen or so of these programs, they had 0 or 1.
Understood.
So I don't know that I know that the nuclear program only had, does that make right?
Because
to be clear?
We probably need more students in that.
Right.
I would hope.
Yeah, you would think. Middle Eastern studies, German teaching, things like that.
Yeah.
Got cut at the U.
You know, and a little bit too, the Weber States, our cuts included teaching, because when you looked at it, you had like 32 majors of political science teaching, or right, and you're kind of like with one kid in it, and it's like maybe we could have just one teaching major that combined all of those.
I mean, we have to be responsive to demand, I think, and the marketplace dictates what careers students are choosing in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So I think there's a balance, and we have to adapt, and I'm glad that we're taking a closer look at how we spend the money.
Okay, finally here, let's dive into one national topic, and that is the everlasting topic. This is the topic that never ends, which is the Epstein files. I don't mean to make light of a very serious situation, but just the latest is that a House panel has subpoenaed the DOJ for the Epstein files, and the top GOP leaders apparently had a strategy session this last week to figure out if and how they might release these and get away without political suicide, I would imagine, speculating there. But talk to me about, is this it? Are we going to see them now? What's next for this?
I mean, I think it's super interesting, and please correct me if I've got it wrong. My understanding was Speaker Johnson actually sent members home so they wouldn't have to vote on whether they released the files. Mm-hmm. So a little bit there's been like activity. Clearly, you've got President Trump going, I don't know why anyone's talking about this, right? But maybe we should. So obviously they're worried about it, but it's like, it's the Republican base that is demanding it. So it's hard, I think, for Republican leaders to not answer that call.
This feels a little bit different than any of the other numerous scandals or issues President Trump has faced over the last 9 years. It's difficult because there have been so many instances over the last 8 years of something similar coming out or breaking. And, you know, I have thought in the past, oh, this is going to be the thing that finally sticks to Donald Trump. This is going to do it. People are going to stop supporting him because of this. Mm-hmm. And it just has never happened.
Right.
This feels a little bit different
because,
like Leah said, the calls for these files are coming from his base.
And
of course,
could there be a criminal element
to it? This started with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I am skeptical that anything will stick to Donald Trump until it actually happens, because I have learned that lesson over the last 8 years.
So the one thing I would say I think is different about this, too, is it's conspiracy theory. So in a way that maybe the other scandals read...
I think they're all conspiracy theory to some degree.
No, they read establishment maybe type scandals. Yeah. Yeah. And President Trump said, I'm going to go in and shake up this swamp, and I'm going to make sure that there's no more, you know, government hiding things. And then he hides something. That's harder to sell.
But Donald Trump, it's always been, right, do as I say, not as I do. He's never been held accountable for other fairly similar
episodes. His administration's not releasing the files.
Right. But again, until it sticks to Donald Trump and until it actually impacts, you know, his political influence and power, I remain skeptical.
Do you think that only happens if whatever in those files presumably is criminal, is something where he aided and abetted, if he took part? Like, what do you think the line is?
I think the difference here is that the call for these files has come from Elon Musk on X. It has become prominent, right, because it's been a nonstop story being pushed out by former Trump supporters, including Elon. So it feels different. It may have legs, but again, this could take forever before we even know what really happened.
Right, and they've just subpoenaed the Clintons, right? So a little bit, I think they're hoping there's something in there that makes Bill Clinton look horrible, because let's just do 1998 all over again.
It's not hard.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right, you guys. I appreciate all your insights today. Leah Murray, Taylor Morgan, any projects you want to hit, promote, feel free. Now,
what's
your time?
I'll refrain from talking about
it.
There's a lot of things I can't talk about on air, Lindsay. You almost had me there.
Do we have any, like...
what cool trouble are you getting into?
State flag merch coming out anytime soon?
Are you wearing socks?
I will mention that I just got home from visiting France for the Tour de France.
So incredible.
And we followed 5 stages throughout southeastern France and the Alps. And at every stage, we very proudly displayed the new Utah Beehive flag.
I saw it on TV.
We did make TV a few times and got some photos with Quinn Simmons, a U.S. rider with Lidl Trek team. We had a great time, proudly repped Utah. Wonderful experience.
Dan McKay will be very proud of you. You got the state flag on TV.
I've received a few texts from you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Producer Peter, thank you for pushing buttons over there.
Oh, pushing every button I can find.
Yeah, you're pushing my buttons. Did you need fact check us on
there
anything? Feel free.
No. We were on the money. There were a couple times where I'm like, and they mentioned it. Great. Next.
Okay, good.
Like, no.
Feel free to add. I'm sorry I never
on
come
point.
To you.
As always.
Oh, you're so kind. All right. Watch our show on ABC4 as well. You can find that on YouTube. Just search for Inside Utah Politics on YouTube or on ABC4.com. All of our episodes are up there, you guys. You can just scroll through and
pick
a headline. A lot of content.
Yeah.
And if you find us on this streaming show, tell your friends to download the News for Utah Plus app, because we want people to see us and to share this show with their friends. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.